No, it's not. What is this stuff on here? We're Hockey Night in Canada, and we're talking about saving the world and all that stuff. Let's talk hockey.
Well, wouldn't you be a little leery of hiring him a second time?
Yeah, well, the
so he is in a case.
Wasn't
prejudice.
Racism? No, it was
well,
because
it is.
No, it isn't.
The
it was
the uprising.
It was between him and the GM. That's why he didn't get it. It wasn't racism at all. And let's never get into that again. I've lost the whole thing.
No.
That left winger, the sky has fallen, Suzuki, he'd be happy he's with him. That was sickening last week, by the way.
What? What is going on with you?
Fair shake in life. Go out and get your own fair shake in life and work
done.
For it. Don't give me that stuff.
And you women are going to get mad at me out there. When you come to the games, keep your eyes on the puck. And I'm telling you, I've seen some awful smacks, and it's always a woman yapping away there.
No,
look at the game.
Lots of fans. What are you talking? Both genders get involved in talking about the game.
I'm just trying to help.
Look at the puck, but don't blame women, men, or anybody else for getting in the odd conversation.
Lives here? I didn't know.
He lives in Boston in the summer.
All right. Hello, everybody. This is Virata, and you are listening to the Welcome to Your Carlson Years podcast. This is the podcast whose title gets more spiritually difficult to say every single time. We record. This is your weekly edition, recorded promptly every 3 months. And we have James with me. Hi, James.
Hi.
And then we also have a very special guest today. We have Poppy Fitzgerald from the This Melnican Life podcast. How are you doing, Poppy?
I'm good. It's good to be here.
Thanks for being here. I'll just sort of set the stage a little bit on where we are in Sens fandom, and then I really want to hear more about this new podcast we have on the scene. I noticed you guys have already recorded, like, what, two episodes?
Yeah, we've released two. I thought it's coming out soon.
So you guys are already just, like, batting 1,000 compared to our release rate over here, where I think we...
I think we're a little bit ahead of schedule.
Well, yeah, so I think we started, I don't know if James has ever shared this with you, but we started a Scotch cast a while ago that James, like, lovingly and dutifully nurtured in its early years. And then we stopped for a while, and then we started recording on this, like, weird webinar software. And it's the failure is entirely mine to release anything. But how did you guys decide to... How did this Melnican Life podcast get started, and how do you guys decide what you're going to talk about, and how's it going so far?
Well, can I just jump in for a second here?
Yeah, that question was for you, James. I want you to answer.
Well, introduce my podcast for me.
I just think it. Don't you think that straight men have this hockey thing covered at this point? I think we're doing pretty good here. You know?
Yeah, you're doing great. I feel really represented. And we just wanted to, you know, like, really support the straight men out there and talk about straight men some more. That's really the goal of our podcast. But
you know, once I was listening to, sorry, one little side note. I was watching the, like, director's cut of that movie Drive with Ryan Gosling. And the director, like, looked right into the camera and said with a straight face that he felt like a movie about masculinity hadn't been made before.
Well,
that's why he made Drive. And I went from liking the movie to not liking the movie as a result of that one thing he said.
The movie Drive for me. I mean, there is that, like, really, really mortifying, like, scene where a woman gets beaten to death, which already made me feel, like, icky about it. But now, now it's dead to me. Oh, the soundtrack was good, though.
Sorry, I interrupted, though. Please. How did this...
I mean, you come on some dude's podcast, you're a lady, you're going to be interrupted constantly.
It's okay. All right, so what actually happened was that my fantasy hockey league and I don't really know how we got into this, but we started, like, jokingly writing mascot fanfic. And then we were like, it would be so funny if there was a podcast just of mascot fanfic. And Beata and I took this a little bit more seriously, I guess, than the rest. But we decided to not entirely focus on the fanfic. So we only have 1 minute of fanfic per episode. The rest of it is discourse like around hockey culture, really. That's the sort of center of it, is the culture as well as the game. So we talk about, you know... masculinity and women's hockey. We talk about spicy gossip because women are oftentimes in sports kind of forced to be very serious in order to take it even a little bit seriously. So we were like, you know what? Fuck that. We're going to talk about the hot goss. So I love doing social media deep dives. I love looking at my beautiful sons on Instagram. And we talk about that, but then we also talk about like academic literature we've been reading. So it's kind of a nice mix of everything.
I will say we tend to earn the E for explicit based on me drinking too much during the recording and just talking like, fucking, what the fuck is with, you know, Pajot fucking getting hurt? And like, you know, that kind of puts us in that designation. Whereas you two...
started drinking like pink wine out of a can, so we might get there tonight.
But
well.
You two, you two seem to really earn that E for eroticism with the mascot minute.
Oh, yeah.
I finally, there's a place for... you know, a safe, non-kink-shaming space for, you know, mascot erotica.
It's actually also just something that, you know, when we started with this, we thought it was so funny because, you know, there is that golden rule that whatever exists, there's some kind of sexy fanfic about it. But the idea of there being mascot fanfic was so absurd to me. And also, I've never read that before. So... I actually was discussing this with a friend because I went on their fanfic podcast and I was like, oh, I've never read fanfic before. And then halfway through, I was like, wait, actually, no, I write fanfic and record it. Which, and my mom listens to it.
In the debut episode, I learned that I am actually against a certain interracial love with the Carlton the Bear and Spartacat sex scene. I was thoroughly grossed out by the idea of Leaf's bear putting his hands all over our stupid lion.
Yeah, I think that's also why, so we call it the Mascot Minute because we make it exactly 1 minute long. And so, you know, if you do want to actually listen to women talking about sports from a different perspective, you know, you can listen to the rest of the podcast, but we do recommend just skipping ahead that 1 minute.
But
people are really into the Mascot Minute, actually. Yeah, people are like, fascinated by it.
So you got the Mascot Minute, you like the hot goss, you're a bit of a clairvoyant or astrologist.
Yes, I mean, obviously, since this is the Welcome to Your Carlton Years podcast, I famously have written both astrology pieces. It's my claim to fame.
So, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but just to sort of tie those things together, do you think that there's any chance that the Babadook and Gritty get back together?
No, that is a really good question.
What's in the stars?
No, you know what? I actually need to find out what Gritty's zodiac sign is because I have completely forgotten. But I think he's like a Sagittarius or something crazy and impulsive. So because of that, I think that the chances are good because that really matches the Babadook's personality.
I just Googled, I just started writing, when is Gritty, and it auto-completed, when is Gritty's birthday? So this is something people are searching for. Let's see, Gritty celebrated his 1 month birthday.
Aww.
September 24th is his birthday.
September 24th is his birthday?
Yeah.
I think he's a Virgo. Oh, that's weird.
Let's see. September 24th. It's a Libra, I think.
Oh,
I gotta say, Gritty is like the horniest 4-month-olds in history.
He definitely is. He's Carlton is notoriously the most promiscuous mascot in the league, but I think Gritty is going to really surprise us because he just has no rules. Like, he's just, you know, he's showing some interest in Spotty, which is great. And also just the kind of aspect of establishing Spotty Cat's personality has been really fun, because we just unanimously decided that he's very shy and uncomfortable and sort of a country bumpkin.
Yeah, that tracks with me. This is reminding me one time I was at an Ottawa Lynx game, and Lenny the Lynx, who might make a, who knows if you'll have a crossover episode of the Mascot Minute with defunct minor league baseball team mascots. A kid yelled out at Lenny the Lynx, "You're too serious, Lenny." I remember it like it was yesterday.
I'm fascinated by the aspect of being a professional mascot. That's something that, like, since the beginning of my hockey fandom, I've been mildly obsessed about, is who's behind the mask, you know, and what kind of weird job is that to have? I wonder how badly you get paid to be a professional mascot. Like, I have a lot of questions about it. I wish I could interview the person behind Spotty Cat.
There is absolutely no way that person is getting paid to be Spotty Cat.
Actually, you know what? How funny would it be if we found out that, like, the reason why we couldn't afford Eric Carlson is because...
Spotty Cat's pulling in a one-way, like, $900,000 a year contract that was just unbreakable. They just couldn't get him off the books, and that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
His contract's also like a 20-year contract. Like, you cannot get rid of him.
So I'm gonna share some information with you. I just Googled while you guys were going through that. And I want you to know if this, I want to know if this is surprising to you. So as we've established, Gritty's birthday is September 24th, which makes him a Libra. Spotty Cat's birthday is October 8th, which also makes him a Libra. Spotty Cat and Gritty are the same zodiac sign.
Oh my God.
Temper, temper. Right? I don't know. I'm just trying to sound like I know.
Let's actually make a really good couple. Surprisingly, Libra and Libra is like always a good constellation. It's interesting, but actually, you know what? I think they both embody like the two kind of personalities of a Libra. So on the one hand, Libras are very like outgoing and social and kind of insane and fun, and they're always the life of the party. And on the other hand, Libras are very self-conscious and very, very indecisive. Notoriously indecisive. And so I feel like they truly, truly illustrate the duality of Libra.
What if you were born on May 27th, 1959, and you know, own a local hockey team? You know, like, what can we ascertain about that person's personality through their zodiac sign?
Okay, clearly I've obviously already Googled Eugene Melnick's birth chart, because why would I not? He is a Gemini, which I personally think is a great sign, may or may but not be, because I am a Gemini. But again, Geminis are multifaceted, and we're kind of all over the place, and I would never, ever trust a Gemini with too much money or power, because you just turn, it just becomes a Kanye situation. Like, we're too all over the place to handle that kind of responsibility.
Yeah.
And so Eugene Melnick should not have the money and power that he has.
Right.
Like, I would not give myself $6 million ever.
Like, you're Eugene Melnick, you own the team, you're the COO, you're in charge of all the trades, right? Like, you know, you like to put your fingers in all the pies.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. That's the Gemini thing. Like, we have so many interests, and like, people say that Geminis are two-faced, but I think that's because they're boring as fuck. Geminis are just multifaceted, but that can be a bad thing. That's not always a good thing. And so, Eugene really is the dark side of the Gemini. I think everybody who hates Geminis because they know of Eugene Melnick. That's the truth.
He's out there besmirching the good Gemini name.
No, I mean, have you met me? I'm delightful.
Exactly.
Diving into professional hockey has ruined my life because I think about people like Eugene Melnyk every single day. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why Beata and I love doing this podcast so much, because it gives us a reason to call each other every 2 weeks and be like, okay, we have to systematically work down this list of shit that we're really annoyed about.
I really like the way you put that, because it's like, I find something we've talked a little bit about on this podcast before is that it really feels like the type of discussions that are permitted around hockey have traditionally been really limited. Like you can either talk about like character or using data in new and interesting ways or whatever, but rarely do people seem to talk about like the communities in which like true hockey fandom seems to be rooted, like the people you talk to every day and you watch games with. And you know, James and I have been talking about hockey for like, I don't know, 15 years now or something like that, and that's way more like appealing to me than like pharmaceutical magnates' weird like investment in the team 20 years ago.
And like Beata and I became friends because of both being kicked out of Red Scarf Union at the same time, which was really fun. But like it's kind of that establishment of a community around your fandom and like around having the same interests that makes hockey so fun. You know, nobody really loves watching a hockey game alone more than they enjoy watching it with friends. It's a very social activity in a way. And hockey players and sort of their personalities and their stances and the way that they project sort of their personalities outwards is influential and important, because especially here in Canada, I mean, kids get put on skates at like 3 years old. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. Everybody grows up watching hockey and kind of idealizing hockey players, and it's oftentimes for the wrong reasons. So it's nice to have a platform to talk about, you know, why is this fucked up and what should change, and, you know, just having a little chat with a friend as well. Beata is so knowledgeable and delightful, so it's always been a really good time.
By the way, Beata, if you're listening, I hope you can find the 30,000 emails of erotic mascot fiction that I have sent to info@thismelonlookinglife.bandcamp.com.
If you send those emails, I will see them too. I have access to that email.
Please go ahead.
Speaking of hot goss, I want to hear more about this Red Scarf Union exile, but talking about it, we don't have to, but first I've heard about it, and I'm intrigued.
So this actually, Beata and I had a 1 year friend of us a few weeks ago because of this, because I remember the day that we legendarily got kicked out of Red Scarf Union. Beata had written in anticipation of the All-Star game last year, where they had Kid Rock play the halftime show. And also, of course,
popular musician, Kid Rock.
Respected country musician, someone said, my favorite quote. And so she had highlighted kind of the experience of women and of queer people and of people of color in hockey fandom, and that, you know, hockey is not for everyone, and that hiring someone like Kid Rock to play at the All-Stars game is such a very NHL thing to do because he's a piece of shit.
Was this before or after he said fuck Colin Kaepernick at a concert, by the way?
I'm pretty sure it was afterwards. Like I'm pretty sure that he said that before they hired him for All-Stars. So it was great. We were already like, yikes.
Just great vibes all around.
Yeah, so Beata had written this piece to Silver 7 and was posted in Red Scarf Union, and she was torn to pieces. Like, it was absolutely amazing, because in order to prove that hockey truly is inclusive, a bunch of grown men decided to start bullying. So I kind of chimed in, and I was like, hey guys, like, this is actually a real experience, you know, like, I've definitely had sexist and homophobic slurs sort of spat my way, or men just randomly stopping me at a hockey game to quiz me, which is always a delightful experience. It's so much fun.
Could you imagine being this person who does this? Dude, young lady, who is number 25 for the Sens? Trick question.
This was because I was wearing a Spezza jersey, which I know is slightly controversial, but Spezza was a great player. Anyway, I got quizzed about Spezza's points and why would I support Spezza, and I was like, because he was a great freaking player. Like, that was the height of Ottawa Senators, of the Ottawa Senators game. Anyway, so point being, it's a shit experience. And so I was like, yeah, guys, like, this is a real problem, and the way that you're treating it is clearly showing that it's a real fucking problem. Like, you're being very, very mean and just bullying this young girl. And so then they started bullying me. Then they started deleting all of our constructive arguments, which was also really funny because there were a few guys that held back, and the men would never have their comments deleted. At one point, somebody said that Trevor, shout out to Trevor Shackles, by the way, should reproduce with us because he's handsome and got our back. It was really, really weird. Anyway, finally, they locked down the thread and then kicked us out of Red Scarf Union.
and did this take place on Facebook?
Yes. It's a hellhole. Don't go there.
How interesting.
Yeah.
We
always thought Red Scarf Union was really amusing because of the terrible takes. Those guys have awful opinions on hockey. They really some of them think that Cody Ceci is a good hockey player, which is hilarious. We always had kind of our eye on it because it's funny, but then it just got not funny because we were being bullied by a bunch of grown men, which isn't great. You have wives and kids, you have other stuff to do, but whatever.
I feel like James and I started our own website 15 years ago, so we wouldn't have to anybody except each other. we missed out on so much of just the baseline awfulness of people, men in particular.
Definitely not gotten much better.
I mean, this is one of those it's an obvious thing to say, but I'm always shocked when I hear that a woman experiences something that I have never come within 1,000 light years of experiencing in my entire life. I've never had my right to enjoy hockey questioned. I've never had anybody go, what was Kovalev's cap hit? And if you can't answer that, you can't fucking be at this game. No one's ever, I have a podcast and a website and a zine, and no one's ever been but you don't know anything about hockey, which is true. No one's ever questioned me on that. It's bizarre. I mean, I feel like it's in the same realm as telling a woman to smile or something. I've just never experienced it. And so
it's super weird. And also, I'm relatively new to the Senators. I've only lived in Ottawa for going on 5 years now. So, I don't know, pre-2000s and maybe 10 Sen stuff. Honestly, I probably don't even know, pre-2015 Sen stuff, because I used to follow Habs games before.
Wow.
Before that, I didn't even understand how hockey worked. I literally learned about hockey and its rules at 16. And that's, not 2 years ago, but it's also not that long ago. So every time some dude is what about this player in 1995? I don't know.
Who gives a shit? Also, old hockey sucks ass.
Also, current hockey success.
Have you ever watched any of the 72 Summit Series footage? Bring a fucking book. It is Harmelov looks pretty good and Cournoyer looks pretty good, and the rest of it is unwatchably awful looking.
Yeah. Like, Beata has definitely made this point recently that hockey has drastically improved over the last 10 to 20 to 10 maybe years, because it's evolved, especially in North America, from being something that's a quite aggressive sport to something that's more skill focused, and you know, players now wear helmets and stuff, which is nice. And people actually care if you can skate, and so and the training is very, very specific now. I mean, we're looking at players being like very specifically trained, and you know, having like physiotherapists and doctors on call immediately to make sure that their bodies function perfectly for this one sport. Like, hockey has been perfected. So why do I want to go back and watch something from 20 years ago when there was like a dude on the ice who couldn't even skate, but was there because he was big and he could punch someone in the face? Like, that is not fun. I mean,
it depends on who they're punching in the face.
But it's probably not. Sorry?
It depends on who they're punching in the face. I mean, I do bring up the people.
True, but I don't know these dudes from 20 years ago. I don't care. I don't know them enough to hate them. It's just, it's really weird when people try to quiz me on old-timey hockey. Who cares?
Who gives a shit? Verada, I'm surprised you've never gotten have you ever laced them up comments? Remember that one, that old chestnut a bunch of years ago?
Yeah. No, you get that less and less now, I think, because there's more and more people who've like never skated before getting involved in the game, which is a good thing. But it's like it used to be sort of like, you know, how can you criticize something, or how can you even like express a preference if you haven't experienced it fully? Which, you know, I don't know, before I started writing about hockey, I was writing music criticism, which is like, it was a very similar experience. There's a lot of people being like, you're just a failed musician, which is also true, but it's like, we get to do all the, you get to have everything. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we're just a bunch of like, fucking like shaved apes on the internet writing about things we like that's the only, like, it's okay. So it's well, not that hard when like the baseline is like, just don't bully people.
Like, when that
I actually like the fascinating thing about hockey fandom and hockey culture now as well is that the people who write about hockey and the people who I've met who are really brilliant and really understand the game very well are oftentimes just nerds. Like, we're all just fucking nerds on the internet. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this is just an extension of my Tumblr days in a way, because I've gone from being on Tumblr and being like, I read this book by Nietzsche and I'm feeling so deep, to going on Twitter and being like, yo, Cody Ceci, retire, bitch. Like, it's just a more grown-up way of expressing my nerd like personality. That's how most people are.
You read a heat chart about how horrifying Cody Ceci is 5-on-5, and you're feeling pretty deep in the hole.
the only person who should always have people being mean to him is Cody Ceci. You know, I'm sure he's a perfectly nice person.
He's kind of bad as well. Really nice.
Not mean, but, you know, mean about his hockey skills mean.
Exactly. I think it's fair criticism just because you get paid so bloody much. Like, I'll never earn as much money as Cody Ceci. So I think I can expect him to do his job, considering how much he gets paid. But on a personal level, I would never look at Cody Ceci and be mean to him. Like, I've run into Cody Ceci and I just ignore him because I don't want to walk up to him and be like, retire, bitch. He seems like a very sweet man. He's just a bad hockey player.
And bad goatee also.
Be real, God. For a second. Let's not talk about that.
How are you that handsome and you have like that fucking IT guy goatee in 2019? I could spend the rest of the podcast talking about it.
Perfectly cute man. Why would you do that to yourself? Jesus. Why do men sometimes just decide to make themselves look... Actually, you know what? I'm going to take back that criticism, because that's something that gets said to women a lot. And I already, the second I said it, I felt gross about it. But the goatee's still bad.
It's fair.
One thing we've talked about on this podcast before too is just like, it's not just that CC's bad. Like there are other bad players who other teams hang on to. It's that he represents the biggest gap between management's understanding of what a good player is and our like amateur understanding of what a good player is. Like I'm not a professional athlete. I'm not a hockey player. All I have is a bunch of publicly available spreadsheets on the internet and like some games that I'm watching. And every bit of information I look at seems to imply that he's a pretty bad NHL hockey player. And like, it's just been years of them being like, we're going to extend him and hold on to him. And you don't get rid of a player like that. And apparently other teams are interested in him too.
Yeah.
Which makes me just, he's a fascinating test case for like our understanding of the game of hockey. Cause there's like something that's just, we're not on the same page at all. Like Pierre Dorion or like just it worlds apart on our understanding of Cody Ceci.
I think the thing about Cody Ceci is he's probably a very pleasant person to do business with. And B, I think the way that Boucher is trying to play him is contrary to his skills as a player. Occasionally Cody Ceci does something and I'm like, whoa, Cody Ceci can play hockey. But that doesn't happen very often. And I think he is just he seems like someone who really likes to follow specific orders, you know, and structure, and he'll stick to the plan even if it's stupid. And so maybe if he was trained differently, maybe if he was, you know, told to play differently, maybe if somebody actually had a better look at his skills, but I don't know.
I think he's got the hockey smarts. He's got that Jared Cowan thing going on where he just seems a little bit in over his head decision-making wise. Even David Rundblad had it a little bit. David Rundblad also a pretty beautiful man, you know, like maybe he got the looks, but you don't got the smarts so much. I don't know. I got four words that could solve all of our problems.
What's that?
Cody Ceci, Lexus Toyota. I say, instead of re-signing him, you know, you work out a deal with Toyota, tie it in with the Toyota-thon, just get him his own Lexus Toyota dealership, everyone's happy. He's already got the car salesman goatee, you know?
I feel like Cody Ceci, you know, as I keep saying, he seems pleasant. He's very handsome. He's like a cool, like mediocre NHL player. Give him like, make him like the coach of a Pee Wee team. He seems like a really good hockey dad. That's what I think.
So one of the things I like the most about this Melnick in life is that at the beginning of each episode, one of my favorite things about this Melnick in life is that at the beginning of each episode, you acknowledge that it's being recorded on unceded Algonquin and Mi'kmaq territory, which is a thing I'm seeing more and more, and it's good to acknowledge it. We record this podcast live from hell. So I was wondering if you guys wanted to check in on our home territory of hell.
There's nothing I hate more than the Leafs victory, I have to say.
Pretty good game. Pretty decent game. But yeah, another loss. Well, I think it was a good game. I think I tuned out like when the Leafs went up 4-2. And then I was pleasantly surprised to see Ottawa come back and tie up the game.
I think it's a really good game in terms of it really showed that Ottawa has a few players that are brilliant. I mean, Thomas Chabot, obviously, is always amazing, my husband. And
my beautiful son.
Matt Duchene. Yeah, I love him so much. Matt Duchene was, like, amazing again. And even Javi was, like, okay. But it also showed the absolute, like, lack of talent in some of the players. So it was one of those games where you were like, oh, my God, that player is really amazing. I forgot about that. And then you see other players and you're like, oh, yikes. No.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good example of you guys might remember in the offseason Boucher or Dorion saying they knew they weren't going to be good. So they were basically like, let's just take the leash off. And like, we're going to just play up tempo offensive hockey the whole time. And at least it'll be fun. And I thought game was like a really good example of that, where it was a lot of like stretch passes. Ottawa gave up a ton of 2-on-1s, but also like had a bunch of 2-on-1s. You know, you see a guy like Pajarvi like getting a couple of goals and a lot of really great chances, a lot of shots on net, but you know, obviously you give up 5 goals in a game, it's kind of hard to come back from down 2 goals and win. But
I mean, it was a really close tie around the end, though. I mean, I was pretty surprised, I have to say. There were a lot of goals. It was a fun game in that it had a lot of goals, you know. And we had that little comeback, which was really exciting. It was actually, now that I'm thinking about it, a very fun game, even though I hate a Leafs victory, and I think that overshadows my judgment of it. But thinking about that, yeah, I just feel like this season has been all about seeing which players are really brilliant and which players just kind of collapse.
Speaking of brilliant players... You know, we're 2 weeks away from the trade deadline, and the two most brilliant players on the team, Matt Duchene and Mark Stone, are not yet signed. Given the complete media blackout that Pierre Dorion has had for the past, like, 6 months, are you feeling... How are you guys feeling about this? Like, are you more bummed out than the feeling before the season when Carlson wasn't re-signed heading into training camp pretty much and you're just like, oh, something horrible is about to happen? Or is it better because you're just a nihilist now? Or let's go around the room and take the temperature here.
Well, if you don't mind me going first, Poppy, I wrote down a few thoughts here. So yesterday's loss, entertaining though it was the 5th in a row. That's pretty bad. I think that's the second 5-game losing streak in a season that's only half over.
Holy.
Yeah, it's felt like 2 seasons already, but
it's been a long time. Yeah.
The next game is against Anaheim, who's the only team that has a worse goal differential than Ottawa. So if Ottawa loses their 6th in a row to the Ducks, I think that to me is going to be basically like the lowest point of the whole season. We're now in last place. We have a 4-point, I think, lead on last place, so we're kind of running away with dead last right now. Yeah, 4 points. Yeah, so at this point, we don't have a game in hand, so maybe New Jersey can make a contest of it and challenge us for dead last. But it's really feeling like everyone's basically healthy right now. I don't think we're missing anybody. So this is the team. Like, this is what it is. There's no, like, there's really no excuses. We have a pretty challenging, I think, home and away schedule. Like, Ottawa has one of the more challenging schedules in the league.
Nice.
So maybe you can say, like, you know, that's a contributor to it. But, you know, Ottawa's bad. They're just bad. So, I think the real like nadir on the whole season is not just Ottawa being bad, but the owner coming out yesterday. And
can you hold back on that? I'm going to get to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I won't go too into it. I think it's just setting up the kind of contrast of like Ottawa's as bad right now as maybe they've been in years. And then the owner coming out and saying what we're doing right now is a blueprint for how you rebuild. You know,
they're not changing a goddamn thing.
I was saying to James on Twitter earlier today, it feels like Trump getting up in front of the UN assembly and saying like no president has achieved more than I have, and like the world literally laughing at him. You know, like, it just, I don't feel like there's a I know that there's never a bottom, like there's always further to go, but this feels like it should be the bottom.
To answer my initial question, you're thinking this is the bottom, and you didn't even answer if you think that Stone and Duchesne are re-signing.
Oh, yeah.
I will.
Oh, the other bottom. There's another ring to Dante's Inferno. I see.
I will answer the question.
Poppy Ocasio-Cortez, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I think that it's not quite the collective dread that we had before the Carlton trade. The problem with the Eric Carlton trade, I think, was really just how it dragged on. Like, it was the worst thing ever. And also, before it happened, we didn't really expect Ottawa to be so stupid that they would get rid of, like, an actual sort of, like, NHL superstar. Whereas now we know. You know, now we know that the possibility is there. So it's not quite as painful as it was before Carlson's trade. I feel like it would be pretty crazy if they traded Stone and Duchesne. I mean, who the hell would do that? Like, we barely have any good players on the team left. They're kind of like our best, at least the best players in terms of guys who have been in the NHL a little longer. And it just feels very yikes. I kind of just, I'm getting numb to it. Maybe I am becoming a nihilist, which I hate to admit. But these days, there's no limit to what I think Melnyk will do. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I think Melnyk is very Trumpian in that he surprises with how far he can lower the bar, and he just continues to do it. So,
yeah. His Trumpian comparisons have been longstanding. I mean, threatening to move the team in the middle of a game that the Sens were winning at a sold-out outdoor football stadium in sub-zero temperatures where the minimum ticket price was $200 was truly that was our State of the Union speech.
Right. Well, that's what makes him so champion, is that his rhetoric has no middle ground, right? Even when he's talking about, even if he's trying to talk about something positive, like, he'll be in the middle of a Heritage Classic outside, great celebratory event, and of course, and he's talking about how, like, things have never been more dire because, you know, like, the money situation is so bad. But then even last night, when he comes out with his comments, he's talking about how they're set to go on a 5-year unparalleled run of success. Like, just say we're going to get back to the playoffs and give you a competitive team. Like, why set the bar? Like, Trump does this all the time, where he's like, we have the most influential presidency of all time, or whatever. Why don't you just say, like, I'm not a corrupt asshole? Like, people at this point are willing to give you, like, the bar is so low for Trump and for Melnyk. And they keep, like, just walking into door frames, like, you know, basically being going to be the best franchise of all time. You know,
like, look what this guy's done to us. We're talking about fucking Donald Trump on a hockey podcast. What's really good?
I mean, do you want me to read this? I love to go into the politics of hockey, so I'm like, that's sort of an aspect of what Beata and I do, is kind of look at the sociological and political aspect of hockey. So I'm sorry for infiltrating politics into the discussion.
No, it's too apt not to talk about. Do you want me to read from the book of Melnyk, the statement that was issued last night?
Please.
Should I read it in a terrible Trump voice? Or
Yeah, do it.
Last night, Eugene Melnyk and the entire Senators hockey team and management hosted a thank you event in Toronto for a group of close to 200 billion people, mainly the team's corporate sponsors and partners. This is like, hold on. So So, sentence one is like, shout out to me, Eugene Melnick, and we hosted a thank you event in fucking Toronto for a group of 200 people, mainly corporate sponsors.
I actually have, speaking of Toronto, I have some hot goss that is like from the horse's mouth. I was invited to a senator's related photo shoot. When we asked, yes, so I will be in a senator's campaign. You're welcome. And when we asked the photographer who had booked him, he said, well, the game we're promoting is in a week, and I got the phone call from Toronto 2 days ago. And I was like, wait, what? You got hired by someone from Toronto? And he was like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't have any contact info for anyone in Ottawa. And it was so Ottawa senators that I just nodded.
He did hire that PR firm from Toronto, famously. And you know what? I got to say, you know, I don't have a lot of good things to say about Eugene Melnick, but ever since he hired that PR firm from Toronto, I think things have gone really, really well for him. I think you know, the public has really gotten on his side, and we're feeling very secure about the future. So, yo, Toronto PR firm, if you're listening, you guys are absolutely crushing it right now. Do you want me to keep going with this piece of propaganda? Okay,
yeah, so during Mr. Melnick's remarks last night, he thanked those in attendance.
Let's remember that's the team's corporate sponsors and partners.
And commented on the importance of the team's partners, as well as talking about the history of the Ottawa Senators during his partnership and the team's more than $105 million of contributions to the local community.
It's nice to hear about the contributions to Ottawa in Toronto, you know. I'm sure that went over. If I know anything about the rest of Canada, is that they love the city of Ottawa and wish nothing but good things for us.
Also, just like to remind everyone of the fact that the Ottawa Senators Foundation funds are notoriously mismanaged.
Oh, yeah.
So, yankers.
I love this, too. Talking about the history of the Ottawa Senators, like, during his ownership. Okay, because I was wondering, I was like, did he get up there? And he's like, well, in 1992, the Ottawa Senators won the Stanley Cup against the Montreal White Men's Athletic Association team. It was called the Challenge Cup back then, and the winners got free rubella inoculations and got to sit out 6 months of the Great War. But, like, so he's talking about during his ownership. Okay, so let's move forward.
Mr. Melnick also confirmed
his name is in this so many fucking times. This is like five sentences long. Also, these sentences are several lines long each. Okay.
Mr. Melnick also confirmed during the presentation that on the hockey side of business, the expectation is that the Senators' rebuilding plan will take another season or two from now. But when his general manager,
not specific to Pierre Dorion, by the way,
confirms that the Senators have all the pieces for the foundation in place, he made the following pledge to the guests in attendance,
and this is the money part.
The Senators will be all in. Again.
Can't make this up. You can't make this up. We'll be all in again
for a 5-year run of unparalleled success where the team will plan to spend close
to the NHL salary cap. Oh, you're truly spoiling us, Eugene Melnick. Not close.
Every year from 2021 to 2025.
You know, he is banking on climate change destroying the world by 2025.
He reiterated,
"No ice by 2025."
Yeah, he'll be like held up in his bunker in Barbados or the Cayman Islands or whatever fucking tax he lives in for white collar criminals.
He reiterated that the senator's current rebuild is a blueprint on how to bring the Stanley Cup home to its rightful place in Ottawa. Thank you for cursing it, even by saying that, you fucker.
I also have to say, wasn't the slogan this year all in? Like, wasn't that this season's bloody slogan for the Ottawa Senators?
I think it's really fucking good. I think it's been a variation on all in like three times now. There was like all red, all in, all red. That's the most exhausting thing I've
There's so many things about like just that came out in the middle of the game yesterday and immediately made like parts of my brain bleed as I was reading it. It was like, so what do you guys make of the fact that it's like, I just read it as he's talking to a bunch of his sponsors. He's about to trade two of the only good players on this team. Why would any sponsors stick around for next year? And so he's like getting out in front of his sponsors and saying, you know, the rebuild is going to be quick. Like, don't abandon us. Like, get ready to sign multi-year commitments because, you know, the rebuild's going to be done in a season or two, which is hilarious with like no first round pick this year. The rebuild is somehow just going to be done. I guess it's just Tkachuk and Shabbat.
Also, yeah, like in 2 years from now, it's like, oh, we can't have Mark Stone and Matt Duchene on the team still if we have to wait 2 years. Like, they only have like 6 years left on their contracts. Like, oh.
But then saying, okay, so there's a few different things here. So we're going to spend close to the cap. So Ottawa right now spends like 91% of the way to the cap. Like, is that true? Yeah, they're spending like, I think the cap is 79. But that's just the thing. Like, everybody spends close to the cap because like it's not a huge cap league. Like the cap ceiling in the NHL is $79 million. Which, like, compared to other sports leagues is not that high. But, like, billionaires are billionaires everywhere. Like, rich sports owners are rich sports owners everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, like, we have a broke one. And every once in a while there are broke owners. But most billionaire sports owners are, like, you know, have around billions of dollars.
Yeah, they're actually billionaires.
And so, like, the idea of being, like, we're going to spend close to the cap, and it's, like, Ottawa is spending close in, like, the bottom five or six teams. Like,
nice.
But that represents 91% of the cap because the NHL is, like, this poor league that doesn't, like, relative to other sports. So that's one thing. Like, basically, he's saying in a couple of years we're going to spend, like, what we're spending now. So you're like,
okay. Yeah. It's not very vague.
But, buckle up.
Everything about the statement reads like standard politician statement, just clumsily done. It's very vague. None of it makes any sense. He's giving us a timeline of like 5 years that...
Sort of. It's like 1 to 2 years and then it's 5 years.
In 5 years we will be successful. You know, hit or miss. He's just giving us a very vague sort of promise. And also, why are you not spending money now?
He also waffles between calling the Senators a concrete wall, and then in other parts he calls it a steel barrier, and then there's talk of slats. But, the other thing, too, is go back to the whole, like, young Trumpito thing, is like, the Senators will be all in for a 5-year run of unparalleled success. Like,
yikes.
In a league where, like, the team that, like, had the least conscripted soldiers, like, would win the Stanley Cup at one point. Like, move over 1976 Montreal Canadiens who, like, Ken Dryden famously described in his book as, like, they were so good it was boring to be on the team as the goalie. Like, here come your 2023 Ottawa Senators that trade away Mark Stone for Magic Beans.
Yeah, it seems like there's so many levels on which it's a dumb thing to say unless you're saying it to people who give you money. Like, that's why I keep coming back to, he's just like begging sponsors not to leave. Like,
yeah,
that's what all that's about. Like, in terms of like how you actually build a team and how you negotiate, it makes no sense to get up and say, like, if you're negotiating with people about how much you can pay them, you don't get up and say, I'm completely committed to paying as much as I'm as legally allowed to. Like, that's a stupid negotiating tactic, right? Like, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't say, we're going to spend the cap for 5 years without knowing, like, what players are available, whether any of your players are worth the money, whether you're actually competitive. Like, spending to the cap makes no sense without any kind of context behind it. So what he should have said is, like, we're going through a rebuild right now. It doesn't make sense to spend to the cap during a rebuild, but it's not because I'm broke. In 2 or 3 years, when we're ready to compete, I'm committed. I'm willing to spend to the cap if there are players that, like, warrant that, then that makes sense. But he, of course, in, like, typical, like, you know, Trumpito fashion, gets up and says, not only am I going to spend to the cap regardless of what it is, which is like, what, we're going to sign like Alex Kovalev or something? Like, what are you talking about? it's like, you know, it's going to produce, I'm telling you, it's going to produce unparalleled success. So even if we go back to just being a playoff team that, like, makes it to the first round and gets killed by the Penguins or something, like, that's no longer good. Like, those are the expectations now. Unparalleled success, which I don't even know what that means. Like, 3 Stanley Cups in a row? Like, what?
It means
5 Stanley Cups in a row.
Over 132 points, by my count, in one season. You have to somehow best that. Jesus H. Christmas. Yeah, I remember I was in Chicago right when the Blackhawks were just starting their rebuild. And I don't even know if they had, I think they had drafted Jonathan Toews. And, you know, they were just starting that era. And the Blackhawks have been terrible for such a long time at that point. And it was a big deal this, when I was there, there was like the fan fest going on. I didn't go to it, but it was just happening at a hotel near where I was staying. And there were like signs all around that were basically like, buckle the fuck up, the Blackhawks are back, baby. And I was like, fucking guts to say something like that in a sport as weird as hockey, like where you have like the Edmonton Oilers, where like their stadium's built on a haunted burial ground that is like, curse the team, you know, like like how do you fucking say that? And then they did it, like they started winning Stanley Cups. But like, it makes me think of that in this situation where he's like, buckle the fuck up for like a 5-year period of unparalleled success. You're like, we don't have a first round pick in the first year of a rebuild. Like, you can't even sell that we're going to get one good player out of this year's draft, like, or it's like also a high rate of success in the draft.
It's also really weird because like there's never been a worse time to rebuild in the draft, like using the draft. Like there's not just a draft lottery. There's 3 rounds in the draft lottery. So you can lose the draft lottery 3 times in a row. I think you can only drop a few spaces, but even if you're like do the, you know, Tim Murray, Buffalo Sabres style, like build your team to suck because you know Connor McDavid is like up the next year.
Yeah.
You can still lose it. You can still lose that draft lottery. And then they've gotten rid of like the long deals. So even if you manage to get a really good player, you can't sign them to 12 years. You can only sign them to 8 now. So it's like literally never been a better time, like a worse time to be like, we're going to rebuild through the draft. But it's kind of your only option is to do it both ways. Like try to be competitive every year be smart about your drafting, sign your good players to really good, smart deals, and just hope that everything lines up the right way in a league with a lot of parity. And like that, just to accept that means that you're accepting the team. You're in this like really weird sport that's like 75% randomness. So my one takeaway from that is do not go in the media and promise 5 years of unparalleled success. That's fucking crazy. You know, like Tampa Bay is like leading the league by 9 points right now. And if they go out in the first round, I'll be like, yeah, hockey's weird, man. You know, like that's what happens.
I think more than anything, this just shows that Eugene is really, really in need of money right now.
Right now?
I mean, like, it really feels like he is like, oh, if you give us all this money, you know, like, we're gonna have, quote-unquote, unparalleled success. But it just feels like a weird way of more begging for money from sponsors, or begging for more money from sponsors. You know what I mean?
That sounds accurate. So folks, get out there, buy Eugene Melnick's mixtape. He needs your support now more than ever.
Eugene at bandcamp.com.
Buy Eugene Melnick's calendar at eugenemelnick.bandcamp.com. Folks, I want to ask, I'll start with you, Poppy. Do you think that statement is the kiss of death for Duchesne and Stone? Like, is that the foundation?
I hate to admit it, but in a cynical way, I do think it is. I think it's like Melnick kind of weirdly comes out with these fancy statements just before he does something that he knows is going to be unpopular. So I think at least one of them is going to go, which is really heart-wrenching. But I have a nasty feeling in my gut, to put it that way.
Verratta?
I agree with Poppy, but I don't know if... I think it's terrible for us to lose two of the only good players on this team, and especially Stone, who is a player that this team like identified in the mid-2000s and drafted in the sixth round and helped to turn into the player he is today. Like, it really sucks to have to trade him now in his prime. When you think about it,
yeah,
the team's been putting like a dozen years into like making Mark Stone the player that he is. And then, you know, now we trade him and we'll get like a prospect and a pick. And,
like, yeah, we're going to get that wild, like 28th overall, like might as well be a second round draft pick from Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And we'll get to like see what it's like to have to play against Mark Stone for the next decade.
I think this is another tragedy, actually. Like, that I think was a big part of the Carlson trade as well, because Carlson is undoubtedly one of, you know, the best players in the league. And it's the same with Matt Duchesne and Mark Stone. They're people who want to play in Ottawa because they want to be, you know, at home. And so we actually have that leverage where Ottawa is not a very exciting city, but it's a city that people like to build a base in. And to have these few players who are absolutely brilliant and who actually want to play in Ottawa, and they don't just because of business, is really quite tragic in a way.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's what makes the Carlson situation so tragic, is after years and years of like feeling like a kicked puppy, you know, compared to like bigger American markets and things like that, Carlson actually was like, even leaving was like, Ottawa will always be my home.
Like, yeah. Well, it was the same with Kyle Turiso as well. I mean,
like, I have friends. Community respecter.
Oh, I love my king. But like, you know, I have friends who live around Westboro and who still see Kyle Turiso in the summer because he, like, this is his base. And it's so tragic to see because Ottawa is not a very fancy, flashy city, to see these few amazing players who really love the community and who really love the city being kind of forced out, doesn't feel good.
There's a part of me that, like, you know, I think Ottawa's going to be bad for a long time. Ottawa's really, really bad right now with Stone and Duchesne. Not because it's their fault or anything, but it's just, you know, part of me is, I guess I kind of get it, like, from a cold, bloodless, like, resource management, like, perspective, to be like, okay, it's going to cost at least $10 million a year to re-sign Mark Stone and at least $8 million to re-sign Duchesne. Kind of like, what's the point, right? Like, if the goal is to, like, not just be a little bit better but win a cup, then what's the point of signing these guys to, like, you know, I don't want to watch the Ottawa Senators without these guys, don't get me wrong, but, like, I don't really understand why we, like, the team would pay so much more for an iteration of itself that is, like, currently in last place by, like, 4 points. You know, like,
yeah, like, why have Mark Stone on your team as your captain when you could have Tampa Bay's 28th overall pick, you know?
Well, I'm just saying, you know, from the perspective of, like, you know, you're going to have to pay millions and millions of dollars more for a team that's still terrible and you're broke, right? Like, I just wish that they'd be honest with people instead of, like, telling them, like, these wild kind of, you know, we're going to have 5 years of unparalleled success when we rebuild in a year. Like, just be like, you know, when you're rebuilding, you trade your best players for picks and prospects. That's what you have to do because the team is bad now. So you don't double down and pay more for the team that you have now.
I just don't think that teams rebuild for that long. You know what I mean? Like, you have to have some foundational building blocks. And if I can take a page from the boy, area chess champion and national treasurer, Luke H. Peristi, who is a nerd and, you know, a delightful one at that, and reads all the spreadsheets, says, you know, it's one thing if you get rid of Matt Duchesne, sort of a flashy, like, you know, quick skater with, like, nice hands. But getting rid of Mark Stone is like, you could get 6 straight years of draft picks from another team. You know, first round picks, you might get another Mark Stone. Like, this is getting into, like, you're trading away Pavel Datsyuk kind of territory. Yeah. Like, yeah. This is not like, just have this one guy to build around. Maybe the like rebuild takes 4 years. It's like, who's mad at 30-year-old Mark Stone on the team? I don't know.
That's true. I mean, there's two players that you definitely want to build around. If you want to rebuild in 2 years, there are two players you want to rebuild around, and that's Carlson and Stone.
And Ryan Dzingel, because that's the one guy that they're now like, well, we might keep Ryan Dzingel. Like, the guy that you could actually get the first round pick for. They're like, we'll have that guy who's worth a first round pick, and, you know, the rest writes itself.
Like, Carlson was able to basically drag the team to an Eastern Conference final, like, practically on his own, him and, like, Anderson. So,
bro, yeah. I was there.
If you want to build, I could like, maybe, like, if Melnick had re-signed Carlson and then had stood up and been like, look, we've got the best defenseman in the world, and we've got one of the best, like, two-way forwards in the league right now. We believe we can turn this around in 2 to 3 years. Then, like, if he had just left it at that, I'd be like, okay, you know, it's a long shot, but I don't think it's crazy. But losing both of those guys and then being, like, unparalleled run of success.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't even know what's going on.
Why not?
I don't understand how he's trying to do a complete rebuild within 2 years where, like, we don't have a draft pick.
With no first round draft pick.
Yeah.
Also, the point of the Duchesne trade is, like, this guy's as good as any first round draft pick. Like, he's guaranteed.
You need to have at least some established players to build around, as you just said. Like, I don't understand how he thinks that he can rebuild and have a really, really successful team within 2 years based on what, like, some young players. You know, some players are going to take a while to mature into the league as well. So I don't really understand what on earth they're trying to do here. I don't understand why you would not keep these two established good players, like objectively good players, and sort of build a team around them.
I mean, the draft has become, you know, really sexy in terms of, you know, like with the salary cap and everything. And, you know, you can have one of the best players in the world on an entry level contract for a few years. And that's really magical. And, you know, you got to strike while the iron's hot. But the thing is like, even in recent history, it's like, I always kind of raise my eyebrow when you see stuff like, you know, some years you get Sidney Crosby and then other years you get Nico Hischier or whatever, like, who's like a perfect good player, but you're like, all right, the number one draft pick in, you know, and we got Ryan Dezingle, and it's like, New Jersey wasn't wrong to pick him, you know, or like sometimes you get Ryan Nugent Hopkins or something where it's like they're perfectly happy, the Edmonton Oilers are perfectly happy to trade him away at this point, whereas other teams get a number one draft pick and they're like, this is the person who will drag us into the playoffs from like the basement of the league. It's a risky proposition, which is like when you trade the first round pick for someone like Matt Duchene, to me, the transaction is, well, I know that, you know, Matt Duchene might not be like Taylor Hall, but he might be better than, he's guaranteed to be better than Nico Hischier probably. You know what I mean? Like, it's a known quantity. And to not have any payoff from that, like, we trade away the first building block of the rebuild for a season and a half of Matt Duchene is really good and now he's not on the team anymore is perplexing to me.
You know what's a really good, what for me was kind of like an interesting example is Nick Bjugstad, who was like drafted by Florida years ago. He's 26, so he's not old or anything. But he was drafted in the first round, like 19th overall. And for a long time, whenever people talked about Florida being like scary good someday because they keep drafting in the top 10, like just for years and years and years, Florida's like drafting the player who's projected to go roughly around where they have a pick. And like, Bjugstad is one of those players who like people were really excited about. He's like a big guy who could score and all stuff. And then they just traded him to Pittsburgh this year. For years, he was like untouchable. He was part of the plan. And they just traded him to Pittsburgh this year for a bunch of expiring contracts and picks because they want to like go after like Panarin like in the offseason. So they just
heir to the Panarin bread franchise.
Exactly. So like, it's the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I feel like it reinforces what you're saying, James, is like there are known quantities and then there are like, you know, and then there's potential, there's raw potential. And like Florida is finally like, it seems like they're just ready to stop like waiting for all of these amazing draft picks to mature. And they're just going to go pay like $11 million for the most talented free agent that's out there. And like, I don't know. I'm not saying one is like naturally superior to the other or something. Like plenty of people have like whiffed on expensive free agents, but it seems, you know, I feel like Nick Bjugstad is a cautionary tale for those of us who are going all in on the idea of like a rebuild through the draft. But at the same time, I don't know, like where are these talented players going to come from? Like you either re-sign Mark Stone or you go to the free agent market or you draft them. It's the only option. So I don't know.
I think that was a really weird way to announce that Jaromir Jagr is going back to the Florida Panthers.
Hey, Ottawa's got to reach the cap floor somehow. Maybe he comes to Ottawa.
Holy shit. I am so fucking... It's a certain kind of energy that guy fucking exudes.
I love him. Like, I just feel like it would be kind of fun to have this like weird NHL legend in Ottawa.
I think maybe aside from winning the Stanley Cup, the greatest moment in that guy's career is when a woman in, I think, the Czech Republic posted a selfie in bed with him and he was sleeping and she was like, I'll blackmail you. Like, she's like, give me some money and I'll release this photo. And he was like, fucking release it. Like, and she did. And everyone was like, he still got it.
Also, just like last year when he was posting like weird tweets about how he hadn't gotten any calls from hockey teams, and it was just like, you know, like 1990 something versus this year, and it was like a photo of him shirtless on a clunky cell phone, and then it was a photo of him staring at his phone waiting for a call, and it was it's the peak of Twitter to me. It was the peak of hockey Twitter.
We need that kind of leadership in the nation's capital.
I'll always love Jaromir Jagr. I'll always love him just for the fact that, so he's second overall in NHL point leaders, but he beat Marc Messier by 1 point and then went out of the league. I'll always love him for that. You know, I like Messier too, of course, but like, you know, the fact that you would get to number two overall and then, and he had spent, how long did, he was in the KHL for like 3 years or something. So he could have been way higher, but one other thing, sorry, I went down a bit of a, I know attendance Twitter is like a whole other thing. I'm not going to go down Ottawa attendance Twitter. I promise.
It's just like that's tremendous vibes.
I just
want on this podcast to talk about attendance Twitter.
But there's one thing that I thought was kind of funny. So the OHL posts all of their average attendance by team, and so does the NHL. This isn't even about Ottawa, I promise. The New York Islanders have an average attendance of 11,700, and the London Knights have an average attendance of 9,000. So
damn, devastating.
Your best OHL team. The Islanders are leading their fucking division right now, by the way. So,
yo, shout out to Robin Leonard, you know?
Yeah. Get on it, Islanders fans.
You're off the sauce. You're off the gear. Fucking, you found, you know, a higher power. Clean up the politics, my dude. In the words of the former captain of the Ottawa Fury, when I was listening to an interview with him on TSN 1200 and they were asking him like a little bit about himself, he said, I'm actually not a very interesting person. So not really going anywhere. Poppy and I can do a tight 90 minutes on the reality show Instant Hotel.
God, I even started like the second round last night. I got through pretty fast.
Girl, some of those human beings are going to blow your fucking mind.
I'm already, like, amazed by all of them. Like, I truly, truly am just, wow. Also, Mark and Janine got robbed in the first round, even though Babe Hive all the way.
Babe is basically the patron saint of horniness. except for Jaromir Jagr, maybe.
Like the photos of the Bobbies fucking on the beach, iconic.
In like every room, in every room. Yeah.
Also, the fact that they have a themed 50 Shades of Grey room, it killed me.
Yeah, it's disgusting. I love it so much.
All of that is going in.
Poppy, where can the people on the Nightmare website, twitter.com, and related places find out more about the Semelnikin life and your Patreon and things of that nature?
The podcast is pretty much everywhere you find podcasts. So you just search for the Semelnikin life. And then you can also find my Twitter, which is coolcatmum with a U. And you can also email us at thesemelnikinlife@gmail.com. And I think, oh yes, patreon.com/thesamalnikenlife. So there's lots of ways to find us.
And not to be confused with Eugene Melnick's actual Patreon.
Yes.